Arthur Golden, welcome to Around and About Chattanooga.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Your first novel came out in 1997, and readers have been waiting quite some time for your second novel. Your new novel is going to come out soon, though. What can you tell us about this new novel?
Well, first let me say that everybody used to ask me after my while I was on still on book tour with my first book, after it had been published, and it was a big success, they used to say, you know, isn't this going to be tough with your second novel? And I kept saying, well, you know, it's a nice problem to have, and I didn't really worry about it. The answer, it turns out, is yes. It turns out to be tough. And what I should have done was to say, I'm going to pick the easiest subject I can because it's hard enough. What I did was I picked a big, difficult subject. And that big, difficult subject is, it's a novel about a kid who starts off in Amsterdam in the 1860s when his family's furniture workshop is sort of kind of teetering on the brink, so to speak. And when everything falls apart there, he comes to the United States and becomes a big success in business. Covers many years. There's two continents. The hardest part for me really had to do with the interpersonal relationships. And I wrote a lot of drafts of this book, more than I did even of Memoirs of a Geisha. But there's no geisha in it. It's a whole different subject altogether. And I am now working with my editor to get it ready for publication. And she scheduled it for fall of 2014.
Do you have a title for it yet?
You know, I thought I did until I told it to her.
She didn't like it?
She didn't actually dislike it. The title that I had in mind was, it's funny too, because my wife, who's a very smart person with very good taste, I would go to her over the years and years I was working on this book, and every so often I would say, I've got a title, and I would tell it to her, and she'd say, no. And then one day I came up with a title that she actually liked. It was the first one, and it was The Fortunes of Gerrit van der Stoel. Then later I decided it should be The Education of Gerrit van der Stoel. She liked that too. My editor likes the title, but she thinks it's not quite right for the book because she feels it should be a bigger title, more of a kind of a War and Peace-like title, where it's talking about some themes in the book that are, you know, that are there that it's good to draw the reader's attention to. So if anybody has any ideas for a title, I want you to let me know.
Memoirs of a Geisha, it was, as you said, a very long process. I've heard it took you 9 years to write it. Is that correct, 9 years?
Yeah, it was 9 years and three completely separate drafts with essentially no overlap between them. I mean, I threw one out and the next one started from scratch. The reason why it took so long was that when I started it, I had a background in Japan. And I'd lived there, and I spoke the language and so on. I didn't really know very much about geisha, but I figured that with a lot of book learning, I could fill in the gaps. And so I wrote a draft based on what I'd learned from research. And just as I was beginning to revise that book after 3 years of work, I got a call from a friend in Japan who said she'd found me some geisha to talk to. After I went to Japan and spent 3 weeks there talking with people who'd actually spent their lives as geisha, and found out all the things I'd gotten wrong, which was essentially everything.
Oh, wow.
I came home and threw the entire thing out and started it all over again. And let me just give you an idea, actually, of what kinds of things I'd gotten wrong, because it was sort of a fascinating process, this research. Just one thing as an example. I knew that geisha wore kimono, but what I didn't know was geisha wear kimono, therefore they are slaves. And it goes kind of like this. A 14-year-old girl who's starting off her life as a geisha, she's going to go and entertain. Mostly what the 14-year-old girls do is by entertaining is just looking incredibly beautiful in these elaborate kimono that young people wear, much more elaborate than older people. And with that stark white makeup and so on, they don't really talk that much, but they sit there and look quite beautiful as ornaments in the corner of the room. And they have no earning power, right? They're 14-year-old girls. But they have incredibly expensive outfits on. How can they possibly afford them? Well, the answer is they really can't. And not only that, but they have to go take lessons for all the various arts of the geisha, playing shamisen and dance and all these things. So as a result, they go into considerable debt to the sponsors, the geisha houses that put them up, educate them, dress them, and they really are essentially slaves because of these incredibly expensive kimono. That's just something that's so fundamental to that world, and yet I'd completely missed it. I'm sure it was there somewhere if you'd known how to read the things I was reading, but I missed it. Anyway, I came home and I threw the whole thing out and started all over. And this time, the details were right, but I was still afraid of impersonating a geisha. And I stayed to a kind of remote perspective. And when I finished that book and passed it around, absolutely nobody was interested in it. They just all thought it was dull.
It just didn't have that personality that's in the published version.
It certainly didn't have much personality. Evidently, I haven't been able to bring myself and go back and read it. But it didn't spark much interest. And I really felt, you know, I've done something seriously wrong, because to me, this is irresistibly good material. And yet somehow after 6 years of work, I've woven it into something nobody wants to read. And that didn't seem to me like a good sign. But I wasn't prepared to give up on the project. So I threw it out and decided that if I'd just taken that leap to put myself into the mind of this character and try to tell her story from childhood all the way through as intimately as I possibly could, it might work. And that's what ended up as Memoirs of a Geisha. That was the third draft, 6 years of work and two drafts before I even began it.
I'm talking to Arthur Golden, author of Memoirs of a Geisha. Authors always hope their first books are going to be a success, but yours was just beyond success. It was an international bestseller. Bookstores sold millions of copies. It was made into an Academy Award-winning film, executive produced by Steven Spielberg. Is it true President Clinton invited you to the White House at one point?
We did end up going to the White House. Yeah, that was quite a surprise. We got a big, fancy, you know, engraved invitation. That's the way this works. To the state dinner for the Japanese Prime Minister. And went, and it was quite a hoot, I got to tell you. A fascinating experience, really, and a little unexpected, you know.
When you were writing this new book, how much of the time you've spent on it is research versus what I've got to imagine is the incredible pressure to come up with a follow-up as successful as Geisha?
I think that people who don't write novels sometimes find it surprising that novelists do research at all, unless it's a clear jump to something that people don't know about. Like you're writing about, I don't know, you're writing about medieval something or other. Then you imagine, oh, okay, yeah, sure, you do research. Turns out that actually almost all novelists, I think, do some research, because you're going to have a character who's a neurosurgeon and you don't know anything about neurosurgery. What most writers, I think, will probably tell you is the research is the easy part, is the fun part. And the danger is that you get so seduced by it that you spend more time on that than you really should. And you end up, you know, slowing down the process of writing. So for me, I try to really be as efficient as I can. And my research was probably 6 months of really pure, like, kind of working on that before I got writing. But during that time, I'm outlining and I'm thinking. And so the process of writing really begins the minute you start doing that first bit of research. Because one of the reasons why you really do the research is to spark your imagination. You know, you're not looking for dull details. I mean, that's the last thing you really want. What you're looking for is the detail that gives you a feeling of something that seems to suggest this whole world that you're trying to develop in your mind. So when you find the right kinds of details, the thing begins to take shape in your thoughts. And it's the two things are inextricably bound together, the writing and the research, in that sense.
I think Memoirs of a Geisha and Harry Potter actually have a few things in common. They're both stories about orphans who enter this special, mysterious world. Hmm. People love Harry Potter because J.K. Rowling created this wonderful, detailed world of wizards and Hogwarts. People love Memoirs of a Geisha because you unveiled this secret, exciting, but very much real world that existed and very few people in the West knew a lot about. With your new novel, set in Amsterdam in the 1800s and then America, do you think readers are going to get that sense of entering a secret world that they didn't really know was there before?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's funny, I've never heard Memoirs of a Geisha and Harry Potter compared that way, but I can see your point. I would say this. When you throw in the word secret world, the answer might be, well, no, it's not a secret world in my second novel in the sense that nobody's actually trying to keep it hidden, whereas geisha actually literally do want their world kept secret. They literally don't want people coming and prying and writing articles about it. But I think that any novel, from my point of view, any novel that really works is a novel that takes the reader by the hand on a journey through a world that you don't know. And that world could be the world of a person that you've never met before, but you should enter his world in such an intimate way that you know it as if you're him. You know, you walk through his life with him. So in that sense, I really do feel like a good novel is entering a world, entering another world and being guided through it. In that sense, I certainly hope readers will feel as if they've been taken on a journey through a world they don't know.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Arthur Golden. He wrote Memoirs of a Geisha, which was a best-selling phenomenon in the late 1990s. Readers have been waiting for Golden's new novel ever since then, and you're saying it's coming out in 2014.
It is, fall of 2014.
You'll be here in Chattanooga for the Celebration of Southern Literature in April. You are, of course, from Chattanooga. You grew up on Lookout Mountain. You have strong family ties here. Your mother, Ruth Holmberg, published the Chattanooga Times. With so much of a Southern background, you consider yourself a Southern writer?
That's a funny thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, empirically, I am a Southern writer. I am a Southerner, and I'm a writer, and you'd think that would make me a Southern writer.
Right.
But I think there's a tradition, a particular literary tradition to the South. And honestly, I don't see myself as a part of that.
Okay.
I mean, you'd think I would be because I did grow up here. But Faulkner and others, you know, a great many others, have explored life in the South, and that's something that I've never done. And I'm not sure I ever necessarily will. So much as I'd like to be tagged a Southern writer, you know, I'm not sure I've ever really earned it.
You've been interested in Japan long before you wrote Memoirs of a Geisha. You got a master's in Japanese history. You lived there. Why did you decide to write a novel specifically? Because I could easily see with your great background in it writing nonfiction, and I know nonfiction's a lot easier to get published than fiction. So what made you say, I want to take all this that I've learned and make fiction out of it?
I almost didn't write a novel. It started out as a book of nonfiction, as a matter of fact. And when I lived in Japan in 81, everybody thought, in the United States, everybody thought that the Japanese were doing everything right and Americans were doing everything wrong. This was a period when Japan was doing extremely well. The Japanese were buying up all kinds of real estate in New York, and it really looked like we were just about to be destroyed by this giant wave of Japan. And then in 82, there came a terrible recession. That was right when I came back to the U.S., and it was an awful recession. You could not get a job. And I had a background in Asian studies. I'd worked in a Japanese company. I spoke Japanese. I spoke Chinese. And I couldn't get a job. And that was when I said to myself, you know, if you had any guts, you wouldn't have been gone looking for a job because I'd always wanted to write. And I felt like, well, here I've been given the chance. I mean, I can't find a job anyway. I might as well sit down and write a book. And what I wanted to write was a book about Japan, a book of nonfiction about Japan. And I worked on it for about 8 months. And I came up with an outline and some chapters, and I sent it to my agent. And what she discovered was that nobody wanted to publish it because a book that was on a similar subject had just come out. So she said to me one day, why don't you try writing a novel? Well, you know, I was naive, and I thought, I mean, I was about 25, and I didn't really know much about writing fiction. In fact, I knew absolutely nothing about writing fiction. And I thought, well, what I can do is write a novel that's designed to tell people all these things that I would have put in this book of nonfiction. Now, there's a term for that, really, a didactic novel, you know. As it turns out, most didactic novels are actually kind of terrible novels. And you don't want to read them because the characters and everything else all come in service to this lesson that you're trying to teach. And who wants to be banged over the head that way? But I didn't know that at the time. So I set out to write this didactic novel that was going to tell readers all the things that I would have put in this book of nonfiction. And along the way, I found myself captivated by the writing of fiction. It was such a challenge. It was so fascinating, so wildly different from what I'd imagined as an outsider to it, that luckily, pretty quickly, I gave up on the idea of writing this didactic novel that I had in mind and instead gave myself over to trying to just craft the best novel I could. That's really how it came about.
Growing up on Lookout Mountain, what got you so interested in Japanese culture in the first place? It seems so far from Lookout Mountain.
It is far from Lookout Mountain, and I can remember being in college and reading a review of a course that I was interested in taking on Japan, Japanese history, and it said, yes, they really do eat raw fish. And I remember this disgust, you know, that I felt at the time. I mean, everybody eats raw fish now, even in the United States, right? But at the time, I didn't even know they did, and I thought it was a horrible idea. So that's how little I knew about Japan. But it came about in a curious way. I've always loved languages. When I was in elementary school up on Lookout Mountain, we had French lessons. It was part of the curriculum. And I actually liked it. And I took French at Baylor. And then when I got to college, after a year or so, I decided I wanted to study Italian. And I got into a conversation with a young Japanese woman. As it happened, the week before classes began, and I was all set to sign up for Italian, and she started talking to me about the Japanese language, and I was so fascinated by what she told me that I decided to take Japanese instead. That's what began my interest. I was already an art history major, so I ended up majoring in Japanese art history. I took a course in Japanese history as well and things like that, but all of it was an outgrowth of beginning to study the language.
When you started working in the very beginning on Memoirs of a Geisha, did you have any idea just how difficult it was going to be, the lengths you'd have to go to really get the details you needed to make it work as a novel?
When I first started writing the book, I had gotten a big pile of books on geisha to read, and I really thought that contained within those books would be pretty much what I needed to know. What I don't think I understood at the time was that when people sit down to write books on geisha, they have a motivation like it's a sociological portrait of a geisha, or it's a love story in which there figures a geisha as a minor character, or something like that. And as a result, they'd all left out the details that to me were the most, turned out at least to be, the most vital ones of all. And they were things like how geisha live, how do you get your hair done, and where do you store your kimono, and how many kimono do you have, and how do the economics of the system work, and what age do people begin being geisha, and all these kinds of things about the actual texture of the life that when I finally had them in hand, I began to be able to imagine what it might be like actually to be a geisha. None of that was in those books, really, or at least not in the way that I needed. It was only when I really went and interviewed geisha that I got those details. So I think at the beginning it was a case of not even knowing which questions to ask. I was so far from really having my hands on the material that I would ultimately need that I didn't even know I didn't have it yet, if you know what I mean.
With your new novel, you say it's set in Amsterdam, 1800s, then set in America. What made you decide Amsterdam? That's where I want to spend the next, 15 years of my life writing about and researching.
This novel came about in a funny sort of way because we have a family business in my family, and it's a newspaper business. And I wanted to write about family business because I think it's a fascinating subject. Ultimately, this is, in fact, a book about family business, very much so. But when I began it, I imagined writing about several generations of a family business.
Yeah, because your family, for people who don't know, the New York Times and, of course, the Chattanooga Times is in your family business.
Right. And so right away, I knew I didn't want to write about newspapers because no matter what I wrote, people were going to think this was actually about the New York Times.
Yes.
And no matter how I fictionalized it, nobody would really believe
right.
that. So I picked a curious business. I picked a business that is very, very far removed, the business of meat packing,
okay.
of slaughtering animals and turning them into steaks. And the reason why I picked that subject was because it's so nakedly about business. It's hard to pretty it up. It's just what it is. You can't wax philosophical about, well, you can, I guess, but it's not as easy to wax philosophical about the wonderful thing you're doing. You know, it's just you're making money, kind of, it struck me. And so I thought, well, who started this business? And the heyday of meatpacking, when it all really became the kind of business that it is now in this country, really happened in the 1870s and 80s. That was the big transformation. From people take a cow out back and, the next thing you know, you've got steaks in the neighborhood, to there being supermarkets full of meat. That began in the 1870s. And I decided that was the period when I wanted to be writing about at the beginning of the book. But I got so fascinated with the founder that I never really got past his life. That's who the book is about. So I thought, well, meatpacking, where would he come from? I mean, he's got to come from somewhere. So I thought, well, he's going to come from either Germany or Holland. It struck me that felt believable to me. And I thought my first novel was about Japan. It was my second novel going to be about Germany. I mean, it's going to look like I'm writing about the Axis powers, you know. And I've always been fascinated with the Netherlands anyway, so it felt like a nice excuse to go learn more. And that's really how I ended up there.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.